Calibrations Podcast for Sunday, November 6th, 2005. Show number 35, coming to you from Washington, D.C. Welcome to the Calibrations Podcast. I'm your host, Phil McKinney. Before we get started, please keep in mind that the opinions and information expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. Well, I'm back at my house in Virginia for all of 36 hours. I landed yesterday evening from Los Angeles. It's now Sunday, early evening, coming up on 5 p.m. Sunday, and I have a 6 a.m. flight tomorrow morning to Atlanta. So upcoming travel consists of being in Atlanta, Boston, and San Francisco this week. Next week I'll be in Albuquerque and then back to San Francisco, and I think I get home sometime around November 20th, just before the Thanksgiving holidays here in the States. Thanks for the feedback. Keep it coming. You can reach me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can always call the feedback line at 703-636-4460, or you can Skype me at phil_mckinney. You can subscribe to this podcast. You can visit killerinnovations.com, and you can click on the podcast button at the upper right-hand side. You can also subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and we are now listed on the new podcast service over at Yahoo also. Thanks for all the votes. This week, we've actually jumped now up to number 86 over at Podcast Alley, so we've broken the top 100 podcast list over at Podcast Alley. If you want to even push us even higher, feel free to visit podcastalley.com. Search for the Killer Innovations Podcast. You can also search by category, so you can look under business, and right now we're the number 2 podcast, and you can cast your vote there. One person has turned in their homework assignment this week on weak signals, and this is weak signals with regards to some activities that are going on in India. So we are actually going to use It actually came in the form of an email, not of an audio. So I'm actually going to use the material that was sent in as part of the week signals for this week's podcast. So let's go ahead and get started, jump into the content for this week. Segment number one, what I want to talk about is FutureCast. Now, in one of the early podcasts, I talked about some of the early types of processes that you could think about using around trying to create new ideas. And one of them, I use the term Merlin. You can either, you know, you may hear it called Merlin, and you may hear it called future casting. What basically its objective is to try to help when teams get stuck. One of the common, I don't know what I want to call it, burnouts, or challenges when you have teams that are focused around a specific product or service, and they're doing, you know, they're coming out with version 1 and then version 1.1 and then version 2 and off they go, is that the team becomes very narrow focused. They're just thinking about the next version, and they don't see how this next step is actually an incremental step to a journey that's something that's more meaningful. It's not just putting this next feature in or tweaking this color or delivering this to one more customer, but that it's just one step to a much longer vision, much longer objective. So one of the things that I've used with teams that has been very productive as far as just helping the teams kind of get out of looking at the day-to-day and kind of looking at the future is this process called future casting. And what do I mean by future casting? Well, it really comes down to two steps. One is forecasting out over some kind of timeline. So project out whether it's months, years, or decades. Pick the timeline that you want this team to look out to from where they're at today. And you need to apply a lot of imagination. So in this case, a lot of it is looking out and seeing, if I'm in, designing the next ballpoint pen, what a writing instrument's going to look like. What is paper going to look like? So what is it, create a future 5, 10, further out, or even 6 months out. Take it and create that future. Use your imagination. Think of yourself as being a science fiction writer. What is the world going to look like? Write it down. Don't, just sit there and think about it in your head and then try to map it back. What I have found is the process of writing it down forces you to be crisp and clear about what is that future looking like. And in that future, you need to identify some components. What do your competitors look like? What are new competitors looking like? Companies that don't exist today, but if you said 10 years from now and all of a sudden you create this new future, what would a new competitor that doesn't exist today, what would they look like? What would be the intersections with other industries? So what other industries would also shift over that timeline, whether that's months or years or decades? What other industries? Where would possible intersections occur between your industry and other industries somewhere out in the future? What would be government look? What would the government look like? What would be the political environment? If you think about 10, 20 years from now, what's going to be the role of the EU? What's going to be the role of the United Nations? What's going to be the role of continued trade programs in the Americas? We've got, NAFTA, they're working on now a similar type of a program into South America to include the rest of the South American countries. So when you think of kind of an EU slash Americas, what does that look like 20 or 50 years out? What do your customers look like 10, 15, 20 years out? Are there new customers? What are the demographics of your customers? What's the average age of the population? What are the population centers going to look like in different parts of the world? So again, write it down, be very specific, and then venture back to the present day. Don't start with the constraint of where you're at today. Look out, create this future. Then step back to your present day of the structures of government, people, customers, etc., and identify the paths to get from where you are today to that projected future. So this is kind of rather than looking at today and like trying to figure out going forward based on trends and patterns from today going forward, you're going out and you're documenting a future 10, 15, 20 years out. And then you're backing it in to the present day. And then you're going to look for multiple paths, multiple key things that have to happen to get from where you are today to that future. And then a key question you need to ask yourself is what would you do differently based on the future you saw? You visualize this future, you've documented it. 20 years out, let's say, you're sitting here today. What would you do differently based on the future you saw? And in the process of documenting these steps to get from where you're at today to this future, you help your team see that this next incremental step, in their minds, yes, it may be incremental, but they can now see how that plays into the future of your products, the future of your business, the future of the economy 5, 10, 15 years out. So it's no longer just a small incremental step, but it's a critical building block for that future. Segment 2, weak signals. This week, as I said in the introduction, we're going to actually, I'm going to get a little bit of a break. So this is not a weak signals that I've had to research or document. This came in from a listener as part of the homework assignment, looking for people in different geographies around the world who are listeners of this podcast to kind of send in both weak signals and technology trends that are occurring in different parts of the world. A couple weeks ago, I played a audio feedback from a listener in South Africa who was commenting on some of the new interesting things that were occurring in South Africa and areas of, I wouldn't call them specialty, but areas of focus. So, for instance, in South Africa, given the research that they've done in organ transplants, given that the first open heart was done in South Africa, obviously a very heavy focus in medical research, those types of things. So I've asked for all the listeners to send it in. You can send it in by audio form, or in this case, it came in the form of an email talking about what's happening in your parts of the world to help give all of these listeners of the podcast a broader view than just hearing me talk about different parts of the world as I visit it. Also, hopefully to get a little bit of a different view from a high-tech touch, which is kind of, since given my background and given my day-to-day job being in the high technology space, you tend to hear me use high tech or technology in everything that I talk about. But everything that I share with regards to the killer innovations, processes and tools and tricks is really neutral to whether it's technology or not. So, jumping into segment two, this case is weak signals. There's actually two weak signals that this listener shares, plus there's some ideas on disaster planning. And this disaster planning ideas is in response to the podcast that I had on the Katrina hurricane and my trip, 6 days that I spent in New Orleans helping in the disaster relief. So let's go ahead and just jump in. This is an email, and I'm going to absolutely terrorize this name. So I apologize to the listener, but I'm going to go ahead and give it a try here. It is Rushkesh Kulkarni, Kulkarni. He's got basically he's a bachelor's in architecture, master's in industrial design, based in India. And he's identified two weak signals that he sees in India that are ones that he wanted to put forward as part of the sharing with the listeners. The first one is his point is due to the large foreign investors coming into India, the India economy is absolutely exploding. As I've shared in previous podcasts, one of the blocks of countries that I track pretty heavily is what I call BRICS. So it's Brazil, Russia, India, and China. It's just exploding there. The employment rate has been increased and there's a heavy demand. In fact, now you're starting to see salary rises occurring in India, which is could potentially make India less attractive. But to feed this engine, lots of the youth are traveling to major cities for jobs. And this is really creating two new market opportunities in India. The first is to meet the needs of the new people coming into the cities. So you've got a huge influx of new employees coming in to work for, whether it's Tata or any of the major companies that are just exploding in India. So you've got this large population, typically of the youth, that are coming into the major cities to fill these jobs. And the second is to meet the needs of the older parents who are left behind. In the Indian culture, and this is me speaking, not the writer, but having spent a fair amount of time in India, there's clearly a situation where the children are expected to take care of and provide for their parents later in life. But now with this huge shifting of the influx of the youth leaving the rural parts of the country to go to major cities for the employment, and it's leaving the parents behind. There are a couple things, this is back to the reader, there are some things that have already been started. One that he'd recently come across is a home maintenance service. And this service gives all kinds of service related to home maintenance, which was previously the responsibility of the youth. So the children would take care of the home and such for the parents. Many of these things are being developed, similarly such that the youth are willing to pay for them and provide the service so they feel like they are taking care of their parents. A lot of the major industries here are focused on developing products and processes and systems for primarily two classes of people. One is people at the bottom of the pyramid. So this is the people, the largest portion of the Indian population, but also the people at the bottom end of the socioeconomic. And he classifies people at the bottom of the pyramid as people having income less than 15,000 rupees. The second is people at the mid-bottom of the pyramid. And this is people with income around 30,000 rupees. And these are the people that are kind of the exploding middle class. They have a decent amount of money to spend. They are design and brand conscious. And these are people who are developing what he calls persona in India. So it's really, these are the two categories. It's the largest population, largest pieces of the population, but clearly two different classes. People less than 15,000, which are the large portion of the population at the bottom of the pyramid, and then this mid-bottom of the pyramid of income around 30,000 rupees, which then classifies as kind of this middle class. The government of India is feeling, very handicapped to handle the load. Hence, it's really focusing on automating as many things as possible, like the use of ATM cards for salary accounts, phone lines for registration, for natural gas refilling, etc. So really, the economic shift, and I guess I'm trying to summarize this first week's signal, this economic shift that's occurring in India, whereby huge explosion in the economy, huge amount of jobs coming inbound to India from other countries, the youth leaving the traditional family structure to go work, leaving the parents in the back at the house, and the youth still having that social responsibility to take care of the parents, and the establishment of services that allow those parents to be taken care of. At the same time, with the explosion of this economy, you're seeing clearly two classes of people and products, processes, support services, government infrastructure needs to be able to address both. People at the bottom of the pyramid making less than 15,000 rupees, and then people at the mid-bottom of the pyramid of around 30,000 rupees. Second weak signal that's been identified in this email is at the organization level, people have realized the importance of design, particularly with this middle class, the people with 30,000 rupees. Initially, like every place else, outsourcing the design or taking designs from other parts of the world and trying to apply it to the local economy. But eventually realize that it needs to be in-house, meaning it needs to be done in-country. So and in the case of India, it seems that they've started recruiting designers at a very aggressive pace, but they haven't had a lot of success because they have failed to manage the entire innovation and creative process. Well, guess what? It's not unique to India. It's happening everywhere in the world. Everybody wants the cool latest product, but they don't make the investment and they don't get their people trained and they don't have a process in place to manage the innovation and creativity process. And the second trend in India, or the second weak signal is based on this email, is that this they believe that this is a good opportunity for people who have expertise in training in innovation and creativity to structure and guide the entire process. I 100% agree, and I'm wondering actually if this email is trying to encourage me to leave my current job and go to India and train on innovation and creativity. Not that I'm going to go do that, but I agree that there's a huge vacuum out there of people who understand the difference between being in an information economy and being in a creative economy. You need to have a different set of people. You need to have a different set of skills. You need to train them differently. And emerging countries like India, like China, like Brazil, like Russia are prime because they also don't have kind of a stuck mindset on how the economy worked in the past and shifting that economy. The typical belief is that here in the U.S., we're going to be the leaders in the creative economy, and we'll just continue to outsource other economies as they become commoditized out. But here's my word of warning is that these other economies aren't stuck in the way that they're structured and can quickly adapt and can focus their educational environments, their government economic policies, and create a new economy focused purely on the creative. So in the case of India, actually back to the email here, there are many new design institutes have opened in the last 3 years in the country, but there are no institutes which formally gives an education in the managing of innovation and creativity in the organization. So, two excellent weak signals: the explosion of the economy and then the recognition of the importance of creativity and design, the recognition that you can't bring that in from the outside, that it has to be local. You have to have people who have that empathy, or you've heard me refer to as empathic design touch to the local economy, and therefore you need to create your own approach to innovation and creativity, and you need to have people who are trained on it. Excellent. The second portion of this email maybe is not quite focused on specifically weak signals, but is around disaster management. And this is in response to the Katrina podcast that I've done in the past, talking about really how shocking it was to be in New Orleans and see how disorganized the whole disaster recovery process really was. So, Rishikesh, and again, I apologize if I'm lobotomizing your name here, put together kind of a one-page his thoughts around disaster management. And here are his thoughts. Even if we put all of the components of disaster management together, it might not function well because of the following problems. One, the scale of the disaster is not predictable. Two, the type of disaster and the needed components are all unpredictable. And three, the components, if put together, may not work in sync with each other, basically compatibility and adaptability. So, the solution is not a product or group of products. The solution is a system. So, the criteria for the system is the system should be modular. Managers should be able to pick up a plan with relevant components like firefighting, ambulance, police support. Two, the system should be scalable. Managers should be able to scale individual components and the system according to the scale of the disaster. And three, the system should allow preparing a disaster management plan and assembling and sequencing all the components together in a very short time, depending on the kind and scale of disaster. So you may need three modules of, and this is back to Phil, this is my view of what I'm interpreting here. So his piece is that you may need to have significant firefighting and less police support, or you may need more police support and less ambulance. But you need to have the ability to have these modules and scale them independently, depending on the kind and the scale of the disaster. Great idea. So the area for development is information plays an important role in the disaster management system. So the idea or the recommendation here is an effective disaster management system would allow free and effective collection and distribution of information between the victims and the outside world. These can be developed in the form of information kiosks in the disaster-affected area, and this kiosk needs to be independent, self-sufficient, accessible, and mobile. So this information kiosk allows people to, one, allow for a free flow of information about how widespread the disaster is and what the needs are. It allows the disaster plan then to scale based on what they're getting as far as this input dynamically, but it also allows for the flow of information, for instance, between the affected people, their family and relatives, and the organizations providing the support. These are all excellent ideas. And it's interesting that now that I read this, I should probably also make the listeners aware that there's a small group of listeners who have stepped forward, and we are working together to create what I'm call I don't know, we haven't even named it yet, so if anybody's got a great name for this, feel free to jump in. But the key to these kinds of issues is very quick deployment of communications infrastructure to allow for this information flow out of a disaster area into the planning process and to allow communications between the affected people and relatives, friends, families, etc. So the challenge today with disaster, particularly NGOs, non-government organizations, is that incompatibility and inconsistent communications infrastructure that allows them to work together. So there are some people with the company that I work with, fellow employees who've heard about the work that I was doing there, who were also supporting other NGO organizations who've stepped forward. We're also including people outside of the company that I work for. This is not an attempt to try to create a product. This is something that we just want to write up a specification or at least agree on some common approach to allow these organizations to come together to create what is documented here in this proposal as an information kiosk to allow for the sharing of this information quickly when these disasters happen. So, any other listeners who want to jump in and participate? We don't have a formal site up from the standpoint of collecting input and suggestions or comments on it. If we get enough interest, I'll go ahead and set that up on one of the servers and open it up as just a free forum to allow people to make their recommendations and suggestions. But this is a great idea. We're already doing just a little bitty part of it, which is just communications infrastructure. You know, getting IP access and voice communications into disasters areas quickly to allow for, you know, real-time assessment of the severity of the disaster and therefore allow and provide that infrastructure to disaster relief organizations. We're already running a little bit late, so this is going to be a little bit of a longer podcast than normal. So moving on to segment three, killer questions. This actually are questions that came in from another listener. So this is actually a listener who had reached out to me via Skype one day. We chatted back and forth, and Alistair went ahead and sent me this email talking about some of the work that he's doing specifically, but then how that wraps into two killer questions that he put forward. So Alistair's based in New Zealand. And actually, during the Skype session, he extended me an offer to come to New Zealand. And actually, I'll probably be in New Zealand sometime either Q1 or Q2 next year. I'll be in New Zealand and Australia. And I know I have a large number of listeners out there, so I will give everybody plenty of heads up before I come out there to make you aware of when I'll be there so we can set up a time to get together. But Alistair's background, or at least in the form of this email, is about thinking about 3D manufacturing. So these are these rapid prototype kind of literally you can print or 3D mill out of a chunk of metal, a chunk of plastic, whatever material you need, the ability to do kind of these micro manufacturing. MIT has set up, I've lost track of how many of these microfabrication labs they've done all over the world. So literally, rather than you know, the thinking from MIT is that rather than ordering something from a catalog and then having it shipped to you and you open up the box and there's the part in it, you order the item, they send you the digital files, you literally have a micro manufacturing facility literally sitting on your desk, about the same size as your printer. You process just like you would a PDF file or a web page, and out comes the item that you've ordered. For those of you who watch Star Trek, kind of the replicator being the closest thing. Maybe a couple months ago, BBC Technology podcast had actually a whole podcast on this and things that were going up in Norway, which is where one of these microfabrication sites are located. So, Alistair is talking about this 3D manufacturing, or what he calls 3DM. And his definition of 3DM is printing prototype technology used to create the finished article rather than just a prototype. So this is not, just a mock-up, but it's a full-function working product. So the killer questions that Alistair puts forward are, what products would I design differently if the constraints of manufacturing, such as assembly, fabrication, casting, and molding, were removed? What products would I design differently if the constraints of manufacturing were removed? Meaning I didn't have to manufacture it. The user would have a facility to manufacture it. How would you design it differently? Or if you want to get specific about a specific product, you could say, how would I design this product? Whether that's, a new mouse or a new ink pen or a new paper clip, how would I design this product differently if the constraints of manufacturing were removed? Well, think about the impact on inventory, parts, shipping. How do you handle returns? Because you've shipped them the electronic file, they've used their own materials, they've manufactured the product on site, and they don't like it. So how do you handle returns? That's kind of a different twist. And in fact, you could also use this within your own process of maybe not even shipping it to a customer, but think about it from a standpoint of on-demand manufacturing. So rather than going to China and having a ocean-going barge full of widgets, you literally manufacture them on site through this automated process. And think about the turnaround time. Today, depending on the technology and products that you're trying to build, in many cases, you build the product, you have to ship it typically overseas to have prototypes made, shipped back, you look at it, you tweak it, you ship it back. There's kind of this long, drawn-out process. If you literally have 3D manufacturing sitting on your desktop, then you literally can remove that process. So again, this week's killer question is, what products would I design differently if the constraints of manufacturing were removed? Or if you're thinking about a specific product, another way to word this killer question is, how would I design this product differently if the constraints of manufacturing were removed? And with that, thanks for listening. I want to apologize for my lack of response on the comments on the post on the Killer Innovations community site. I've taken, as I said in the last podcast, I've taken on some additional responsibilities at the company that I work for, which is caught to be absolutely out of control, crazy. So, but I'll try to get this week to respond and participate more in the on the KI community site to help maybe take a little bit of the burden off from me having to be the primary tracker and responder to items and information and encouraging, listeners to participate. If there are listeners who would like to volunteer to become the moderators for sections of the community site, just please drop me an email. Give me a little bit of background on who you are and what your background is and your interest in being a moderator. Because what I'm looking for is to get one moderator for each of the sections, whether that be the economy section or the killer question section or whatever. And therefore spread the burden and the responsibility across some of the listeners rather than on my plate, given just my time constraints that I have right now. So again, I apologize, but I'll be working to do better. If you don't participate, I would encourage you to do so. You can visit the killerinnovations.com site, click on the KI Community button on the upper right-hand side of the page, and it'll take you directly to the KI Community site. There's a lot of activities, discussions, participation going on right now, so I would encourage you to jump in, participate, share your expertise with the other listeners, and pay it forward. Keep the feedback coming, As always, you can reach me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. Call the voicemail feedback line at 703-636-4460. Or you can always Skype me at Phil_McKinney. Please remember to vote on Podcast Alley. Voting on Podcast Alley is the easiest way for you to say thanks to the producers of your favorite podcast for all the time and energy they put into pulling together the material, and also for the cost that they incur for the hosting and the bandwidth in order for you to get the benefit of the podcast community. So remember to vote. Tell others about the Killer Innovations podcast. You can direct friends, coworkers, even your management teams to the KI site at killerinnovations.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And now we are listed on the new podcast service over at Yahoo. So get subscribed, get others to subscribe, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.